I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The Bernie Sanders revolution continues with a win on Tuesday in West Virginia. So far, he's won 19 states and Hillary Clinton has won 23, although she's way ahead in the delegate count. Independents and younger voters were the keys to Sanders' victory yesterday, and a good number of them said they'd vote for Donald Trump in November if either Sanders or Clinton were the Democratic nominee for president. Interestingly, in 2008, Hillary Clinton clobbered candidate Barack Obama in the West Virginia primary by more than 40 points. Well, a lot has changed in the last 8 years. We asked Domenico Montanaro to join us once again on Radio Times, lead editor for politics and digital audiences for NPR. And Domenico, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Two big wins for Sanders last week in Indiana and yesterday in West Virginia. Is he making Clinton nervous?
Well, I mean, I think he's made her nervous this entire time. I mean, he's won more votes than she would have ever thought. You know, coming from 60 points behind is certainly something that no one really expected. But the math is just not on his side at this point. I mean, he's going to need 65%, almost two-thirds of all remaining delegates to win a pledge majority. And since she's got such a big lead with those superdelegates, he'd need 85%. I know Sanders supporters don't love us talking about superdelegates because they can vote however they want. But in reality, these are people who've come out publicly to support her. And without him winning a pledged majority, it's kind of tough to see why they would change their minds.
Well, and I'm sure because we've done shows like this before, and you're right, a lot of Bernie Sanders people don't like us talking or anyone talking about the delegate math, but such as it is, it does, though, make him, if not the nominee in Philadelphia in a couple of months, it certainly makes him a player at the convention.
No question about it. I mean, the fact is, I think that that's kind of what he's after here, is, you know, to really try to put an imprint on the Democratic Party in a way that, and he's got real legitimacy to do that. I mean, wins again, you know, he keeps winning. And the fact is, demographics have been destiny in this campaign, and her supporters are locked in, his supporters are locked in. There just happened to be that there were more supporters of hers. You know, when you talk about non-white voters, African-Americans in particular, African-American women in particular, and West Virginia was different. Kentucky and Oregon next week will be different. But Bernie Sanders is definitely going to have a say at this convention on, you know, what the platform will look like, what will the minimum wage be in the country that Democrats will stand to support. He's had a very clear economic message, something that she really hasn't had, and that's going to be you know, a big fight at the convention, and he's going to have some leverage there.
I thought one of the interesting exit poll findings was that come November, I mentioned this in my intro, that a number of people who voted for Sanders in West Virginia would vote for Donald Trump, even if Sanders were the nominee for president. And it seems to me you can't find two more different candidates than Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, but there's something that voters see that connect these two.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not that different in some ways. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, there's this, they're very different in some ways, and
yes,
they're not on the economic populism, though. I mean, when we think about the diagnosis of the problem, they both sort of look at the problem in similar ways. They think that trade is the problem. They think Wall Street is the problem. Same way that Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street had similar diagnoses, they just have very different solutions on how to go about changing it and who's to blame, right? So I think that that's a big reason why. I think West Virginia is West Virginia, and it's a very different electorate, and that's obviously why you saw such a big shift. You also have a lot of people in West Virginia who are still Democrats, who are registered as Democrats, who really vote Republican for the most part, and they voted in that primary because there were some other races that were going on, other primary races, and those are really probably not going to be people who vote for, even if Bernie Sanders were on the ballot in November, indicating that they would even vote for him over Donald Trump, they'd vote for Trump. So for many of those folks. So it was a very different kind of primary than in other places, but it's a big country and we have lots of different kinds of states.
Indeed we do. Let me just give out the phone number for folks that want to join the conversation, and it's 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Domenico, how much do you think Hillary Clinton was hurt by this statement? And then I'll put it into context. The statement is, we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business Right. Let me put it in context. She says, I'm the only candidate which has a policy about how to bring economic opportunity using clean, renewable energy as the key into coal country, because we're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business, right? And we're going to make it clear that we don't want to forget those people. Those people labored in those mines for generations, losing their health, often losing their lives to turn on our lights and power our factories. Now we've got to move away from coal and all the other fossil fuels, but I don't want to move away from the people who did the best they could to produce the energy that we relied on. That one sentence, how much do you think that hurt her?
Well, that's certainly a very different way to put it than the way it's been interpreted, for sure. And I think that a big part of this is that Hillary Clinton, I don't know that it hurt her that much, because Bernie Sanders was already leading in the polls before that statement. So it's sort of hard to say that that was the reason for her loss. But certainly West Virginia has changed a lot. I mean, Bill Clinton was able to win it. Michael Dukakis won that state. So, you know, Democrats have changed their registration. They've moved more Republican. But it's certainly something in this general election that Hillary Clinton's going to have to figure out. How does she appeal to white working class voters, blue collar voters? Because Donald Trump is going to try to appeal to them. And when you think about coal, you know, Democrats do have a problem when they talk about energy and talking about trying to, you know, change in those states, in places like West Virginia, in Kentucky, because people who, you know, are used to coal and used to that as their main industry, just hear Democrats, coastal elitist Democrats, saying, you know, your job isn't worth, you know, much, and, you know, we need to change. I think it'd be more beneficial for her to do something like Barack Obama did in 2008, where he ran this ad where he had somebody who was installing solar panels on a roof saying, hands that used to do this, and showed them, you know, working in a mine or working on a factory floor could do this, and then showed them working on a roof, you know, installing solar panels. You need to give a positive message of change rather than, you know, and offer a way for people to get jobs rather than just simply saying, you know, these jobs have to go away.
Well, I mean, it should be said that it's really fracking and natural gas that's taken a bite out of the coal industry, and also just the different ways that we mine right. for coal now is very different from people going down into the mines.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a very, you know, this all of the above energy approach. The Obama administration has tried to increase fracking in a way that to wean the country off of foreign oil was the goal, and you've seen a lot more of those jobs shift. But when you have places that are reliant on one industry, and that industry weans or goes away, you're going to have a lot of people who are out of work. And that, while there might be a change over a generation for the people who are stuck in the middle, those are very real problems, and Democrats need to do a better job of talking about the realities that those folks face and the problems, the solutions to solve those issues.
Let me see what Dan from Fishtown has to say. Dan, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
How are you doing?
Good.
So in light of the recent poll numbers showing Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, the race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump being so close, I'm wondering if the Democratic Party, especially the superdelegates come to convention, really have to look in the mirror and make a decision about what's right for the country, because, you know, we have, you know, Al Gore was qualified, John Kerry was qualified, but they lost. So, you know, that's ultimately that's my question, is whether or not, like, the Democratic Party can really come around to what ultimately could be a massive upset.
Well, Dan, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Domenico, I've certainly heard this before. I'm sure you have as well. What do you think?
Well, I mean, the fact is, you know, these superdelegates think that Hillary Clinton is more electable than Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders would make the argument that he's more electable, obviously. But that's the play that they're making. They believe that she, you know, represents a kind of change that is less revolutionary. And, you know, while Bernie Sanders' numbers are quite good right now, actually, against someone like Donald Trump, that would change if the real negative attack started on him. I mean, you have to remember, the Republican Party has basically for the last 2 years been targeting Hillary Clinton as the potential Democratic nominee and taking out everything they can on her. They feel, the superdelegates feel like she's been somebody who's been through the mill And, you know, they think that she's somebody who could win. You know, you've seen a version of this actually play out on the Republican side, where you have conservatives saying that we just weren't conservative enough. And that's the reason why we keep losing, keep nominating these rhinos, these Republicans in name only, with people like Bob Dole or Mitt Romney and these moderates who people say can win, but then they lose. Well, if Hillary Clinton loses, you're certainly going to see this argument be made much more strongly. And I think you're going to see a change in the kind of Democratic nominees that get put forward.
Can you rely on polls in May that predict what happens in November? Is it possible to do that, especially in this campaign season?
No, it's a terrible way to look at things. I mean, honestly, the best way, you know, we started our NPR general election battleground ratings yesterday, and I really tried to downplay polls because at this point, they don't really tell you a whole heck of a lot. The most important thing to look at is historical trends, how the states have gone in the past, and demography. And those two things start any Democrat with a head start, any traditional Democrat. And then you look a little bit at polls to sort of break ties or to see where things have moved, or if an unconventional candidate like Donald Trump really does change the map in a negative way or a positive way for him. So, you know, polling is always something that needs to be taken with a grain of salt. I do not think polls in May predict anything about November. They are snapshots and pretty bad ones at this point because the cases haven't been litigated even between the two candidates. The primaries are still essentially going on.
Well, I certainly remember 8 years ago a number of Hillary Clinton supporters vowing never to support Barack Obama if he were to be the candidate. And, you know, lo and behold, when things changed and the fall came around, they changed their mind. I'm not saying that Bernie supporters would do that or not, but you know, it's
well, you actually had a bigger number of Hillary Clinton supporters back then, the so-called PUMAs, Party Unity My Blank, who didn't want, some 40% said they would never support Barack Obama. That certainly obviously didn't come to fruition because Barack Obama won and won twice. It takes time. You know, time does heal some of these wounds. The unity makes a big difference. Hillary Clinton making that big speech in June and endorsing President Obama. You will see Bernie Sanders rally with Hillary Clinton for unity, you know, provided that the Democratic Party listens to him on this platform. And you will see some of those Sanders supporters come around. And most, by the way, most Sanders supporters have a very positive view of Hillary Clinton. There are some of these hashtag Bernie or bust folks who very well may never vote for her, may vote for someone like Jill Stein in the Green Party or vote for some other write-in or write-in Bernie Sanders. You know, there are always going to be people like that. But the Clinton folks hope to at least get many, if not most of them.
Well, to be continued. Domenico Montanaro, thanks for joining us once again on Radio Times by cell phone, standing on a street somewhere in Washington, D.C.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And he's lead editor for politics and digital audiences for NPR, talking about the vote yesterday, the primary in West Virginia, Bernie Sanders beating Hillary Clinton quite handily. We'll be talking about Republican Donald Trump and what his candidacy is doing to the GOP. After this very short break, stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoane, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Well, Donald Trump may have won the hearts of millions of voters, but he has yet to win over many of the leaders of the Republican Party. Trump is the apparent Republican nominee for president, and House Speaker Paul Ryan said he is not yet ready to endorse him. New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte said she would support him but not endorse him. The Bush family is boycotting the convention. Lindsey Graham tweeted, "If we nominate Trump, we'll get destroyed and we will deserve it." Now, not everyone is distancing themselves from Donald Trump, but his candidacy is causing real agita among conservatives and in the GOP. We have two guests who have joined us. Christopher Nicholas is a veteran GOP strategist and president of Eagle Consulting Group in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And Chris, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It's been almost 4 years. So.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
I'm glad your boycott of me is over.
Don't take that personally. Also with us, Alan Novak. He's a Pennsylvania-based attorney, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. He currently serves as the president on Novak Strategic Advisors, a consulting firm. And Alan Novak, it's been less than 4 years, and nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Marty, it's always good to be with you, and it's good to catch up with Chris. I'm a big fan of Chris.
Well, let me begin with you, Chris. Has Donald Trump hijacked your party?
Well, he's going to be the presidential nominee, and the Republican Party, you know, we like to, a friend of mine says Democrats fall in love, but Republicans fall in line. So that is kind of what we're predestined to do, regardless of what you think about Donald Trump's candidacy, yay or nay. His whole campaign's been like a car wreck on the highway. Everybody stops to slow down and look at it, and it becomes the topic of conversation. So like it or not, he becomes the de facto leader of the party, regardless of if me or anyone else supports him publicly or not. That's just how the world works, just as Hillary Clinton will become the face of the Democratic Party whenever she gets done handling Bernie.
I'm looking at a quote, actually. It's from a month or so ago from the Wall Street Journal. And, Alan, I'll put this to you. He was interviewed by the Wall Street Journal, and Donald Trump says, "This election isn't about the Republican Party. It's about me." What do you make of his candidacy?
I would draw a line through. Well, he's right to an extent. It is a very much a personality type of driven election so far. But I think the bigger overriding theme is this is an outsider versus insider dynamic playing out in these primaries. I think the two outsider candidates, Trump has certainly surprised everyone. There's not one political pundit that I know that predicted this a year ago or 6 months ago. And secondly, Bernie Sanders' staying power. I mean, a lot is going to be made about the fact that Paul Ryan and certain Republican leaders, including somebody I admire a great deal, Governor Tom Ridge, Secretary of Homeland Security Tom Ridge, is not going to support Donald Trump. He says today and has said repeatedly for the past month. But I think bringing both parties together is going to be difficult because Sanders is generating lots of enthusiasm of the outsider versus insider nature as well on the Democrat side. So I think this is the year of the outsider. What that means, you know, in terms of an outcome in November is yet to be determined.
But, Alan, you don't see, and perhaps it's just the Democrats are in a different place, but you don't see leaders in the Democratic Party. I mean, you've got these superdelegates who have basically signed on to Hillary. Hillary Clinton. I mean, they've sort of said this is our candidate, but you do not see that in the Republican Party. I'm looking at a House Speaker Paul Ryan. He's speaking now. I've got commentaries, you know, piled up on my desk here of Republicans and conservatives who are tearing their hair out over Donald Trump and his candidacy. So, I mean, it just seems to me the Republican Party is having. I'm not going to say a nervous breakdown, but having a problem with Donald Trump. There's certainly parts of this party.
It depends on how you define party. I think my caution to leaders, including a couple of congressmen I know very well, including where I live in the southeastern part of the state. And I've said, be careful on this. You may not want to be next to him, but you don't want to be at odds with his support. I think this is a wake-up call to the Republican Party to re-engage with voters. And maybe I think ultimately Paul Ryan is going to come around. I think he did two things that were very smart in what he said. Number one, he said, look, I've got an agenda and I've got a congressional caucus that I need to give cover to and I need the lead. I think we're going to see after this meeting with Trump and Paul Ryan a coming together of sorts. And I think it's a dance that's going to evolve over the course of the summer. If you see more polls, if these leaders see more polls like the Quinnipiac polls that came out yesterday, that has Trump beating Hillary Clinton in Ohio and 1 point behind, so virtually tied in Pennsylvania in Florida. A few more polls like that, a lot of people will come in line.
Well, Chris, let me go back to you. And actually, I saw this is a guy who is the spokesperson for the Southern Baptist Convention. And he was extremely critical, talking for some evangelicals. He says, I don't even want my children to watch Trump. That's the burden for a lot of people of faith right now. And we see the race baiting and the kind of misogyny that we've seen all throughout this year. If evangelical Christians are not willing to stand up for decency and morality, then we don't have any credibility left for the future. Donald Trump tweeted, Russell Moore is a truly terrible representative of evangelicals and all the good they stand for, a nasty guy with no heart. I mean, you've got a candidate, who talks about crooked Hillary and crazy Bernie. Is that what Republicans want heading up their party?
I think Donald Trump has a very interesting next month and a half or so as the lead up to the convention, because he's been fighting to be the nominee, and now essentially he is. And as Alan can tell you, the burdens of leadership are much greater than anyone from the outside looking in can even imagine. So if he wants to be more presidential, well, he's got this platform now to do that until our convention in whenever it is in July. What I have cautioned the clients is endorsing Donald Trump now is the easiest day of your campaign, and harder days lie ahead, as you are constantly asked, do you support what he just said today? Mm. What I have also said is that if you don't endorse him, that's the hardest day of your campaign now, and the days become easier.
Well, that's very interesting. And is that does that explain why some people say, I'll support him, but I won't endorse him, which is sort of something down the middle? Pat Toomey had an op-ed in the Philadelphia Inquirer talking about the fact that he didn't vote for him, and he's waiting to see what Donald Trump does. He's not happy, clearly, but he's trying to, as John Baer said in the Daily News today, trying to straddle this issue.
I tweeted out that article and said, this is a roadmap for other Republicans, because what I think Senator Toomey said was essentially, okay, Donald Trump, the burden is on you. Show me you want to be the leader of the party and not just the leader of you. Gets back to what you quoted earlier to Alan. Trump has to figure out, just like any presidential candidate has to, while they're at the top of the ticket, it can't be all about them. There's just too many moving parts. So I think a lot of people like Toomey and myself are waiting to be shown by Donald Trump that he has that other gear.
Well, Alan, I know you want to say something, but all candidates, it seems to me, kind of pivot once the general election is around. But Donald Trump has said things about banning Muslims. He insulted John McCain. He's demeaned other candidates. He's talked about people's body parts. He's a birther. how do you take back all that stuff, or do you?
I don't think you do. I think you explain the policy behind the statement. Everything you said in the choppy, two or three word description of what he said divides people. Taking a pause button and taking a look at the security interests of the country. I mean, frankly, he needs to explain policies and not have without backing off the statements, because I don't think he's going to back off the statements. He needs to explain how he would do things. And the surrogates on his behalf have to explain how he would do things. I think what Pat Toomey and some other Southeastern Congress members are doing is straddling that line between endorsing Trump and not alienating Trump supporters. Politics is about addition, and the candidates running for Congress and for the state legislatures are all about adding votes, not subtracting votes. So it's a delicate dance. Mm-hmm. You saw all those congressmen in the northern part of Pennsylvania endorse Trump. Well, they did that prior to the primary because their poll said Trump was going to just win by big numbers in their district. So they didn't want to be out of sorts, out of alignment with Trump supporters without necessarily taking every statement Trump says and saying me too.
If you live in old white Pennsylvania and that's where your district is,
right,
Trump is a neutral to a net positive. What I have reminded people is that there are 6 statewide elected offices in Pennsylvania, and right now Republicans only have 1, which is Pat Toomey, and he's up for re-election this year. So when your district includes all 67 counties, then you have problems, because what Donald Trump does for the Democrats potentially is he takes away the large amount of time and money they have to use to gin up support in their base, which is Black Philadelphia and Black Pittsburgh. That takes up an inordinate amount of time and money for the other side. So when Donald Trump becomes the polarizing figure he has, and maybe will continue to be, a lot of that burden's taken off your plate, because he becomes the Democrats' best get-out-the-vote GOTV machine. So then if you're running statewide, if you're the auditor general candidate John Brown, or the treasurer candidate Otto Voigt, or the attorney general candidate John Rafferty, and you have to run in old white Pennsylvania but also young non-white Pennsylvania, then, as Alan said, politics is about addition. But, you know, you come out of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh down 525,000, 550,000 votes. There's not enough angry old white men out there in the rest of the state to make that up for you.
That's my concern. I hear you. Chris, let me throw something back at you. And this is, I'm just taking Donald Trump at his word and things that he has said during the campaign trail. And in one of the debates, he did say that he thought wages were too high. How do you resolve, especially with his voters who, as we understand it, I mean, obviously they care about trade, they care about the economy and jobs. But when their candidate says that wages are too high, how do you reconcile that?
You know, both my boys will be in college this fall, so there's no way my wages can be too high because I got to pay two college tuitions. So
I feel your pain. Yes. Been there.
You know, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, they are both one percenters. Donald Trump may be a little bit higher in that 1% than Hillary, but, you know, they're kind of immune from the normal economic trends that the rest of us have to deal with because they're at that super high income level.
But she hasn't said that wages are too high.
That's true. I think someone else said yesterday, and I'm sure other people have said it before, does Donald Trump have an unexpressed thought? and I think that's where a lot of Republicans have some issue, is not necessarily with the Trump's issue positions, but how he does or does not comport himself. And the thought of him being in the Oval Office with all the powers inherent in that, with the personality that has got him to where he is. I'm a big believer in the old saying that past performance is the best indicator of future performance. So if you're Donald Trump and you've had all the successes he's had in his life, you've just taken over the GOP by becoming the presumptive nominee, what impetus is there to change? I think there's zero, okay? So if that is the cause of a lot of voters' angst with him, and he's not going to change that, that's why I say to potential clients and clients, look, if you don't endorse him now, it's a tough day today, but it gets a lot easier in September. When he says something outlandish and all the cameras rush to you and say, what do you think? And you can say, I didn't endorse him. And if you do the reverse, all of a sudden my concern is, as a consultant, is your whole campaign spirals out of your control because all the media wants to talk to you about is, do you agree with what Donald Trump just said today? And then you lose control of your campaign for Congress or state senate or attorney general or whatever.
And Alan, picking up on that, and again, you know, a number of conservatives and Republicans have said that he's temperamentally unfit for the office. I mean, you know, take away his Twitter account and I'm not sure what would happen. But there are concerns about someone with that kind of temperament who's been used to hosting a reality show and being a real estate guy, does he have the kind of temperament to be the president of the United States?
Well, you know, I think that remains to be seen, because by all accounts, he hasn't run a chaotic business empire. He's run that in pretty successful fashion. He had a pretty long run as a TV host, and I guess his numbers were fairly good there with the viewers. I think part of the show of Donald Trump is what's getting him, that's propelling him along. I think there's more to Donald Trump. Look, let me confess, he was my fourth choice because he was my last choice. I started with Bush, went to Rubio, voted for Kasich. Donald Trump is who I'll probably be voting for, undoubtedly who I'm going to be voting for this fall. So I say that, you know, I want to disclose that because I'm not, you know, beating the drum as a Donald Trump advocate. But I guess I'm cautioning people to look at the big picture here. And the big picture is what he has been doing has been working. What he has been doing has been connecting to people, people who feel disaffected by both parties, by the establishment, by government. What he's been doing has been putting a highlight on issues that are very popular in working class communities. And it's been a while since Republicans have been able to do that. So I would separate the showman from the businessman and not lump them together to say, okay, what you're seeing here in a pretty devoted strategy to dominate media cycles, which has been successful for him.
Sure.
I wouldn't discount the fact that by all accounts he's run a fairly successful business and was a fairly successful TV personality, where people have to like you to keep turning on the TV to watch you.
Well, and Chris, about a minute before our break here, but it's interesting that Republican voters, looks like they chose the least conservative and the least Republican of, what, the 17 candidates that were running for president?
Was it only 17? It seems like a lot.
I think it was only 17. I could be wrong, but no, go ahead.
I always thought that was an advantage for Trump because he got into the primary with 100% name ID. And all these other folks, you know, no one knew Lindsey Graham outside of the South, and et cetera, et cetera. So Trump always had that advantage, so he could kind of bigfoot the media, which he exploited mercilessly. And I think the media has figured out that, boy, they did allow him to get a free ride. I mean, who gets to call into Sunday shows from, you
tell
know,
me about
phone
it. Yes.
And not be on there? You know, whatever. Those people will have to deal with that. But as Alan said, he was successful. So with that success comes special burdens, and I think every person who's been president can tell you that running for office and governing are really different. I am not as optimistic as Alan is, potentially, that Trump the showman and Trump the businessman, you know, will stay on these separate paths and the good part will come out as president. I think that's what gives a lot of people a lot of pause. But Alan is correct. There's a lot of angry people out there. I think this is the revenge of Barack Obama. And my cautioning to Republicans is Obama's already beat us twice, okay? If we give in to him and nominate someone like Trump, who is so divisive,
Chris, we got to take
us, it's going to beat us a third time.
We got to take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with two Pennsylvania Republican strategists about Donald Trump and the GOP. Alan Novak, a former chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. He currently serves as the president on Novak Strategic Advisors. That's a consulting firm. And Christopher Nicholas is a veteran GOP strategist and president of Eagle Consulting Group, and that's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation. Let me read an email from Daniel. He says, conservatism used to mean staying the course and holding the line. Today's Republicans want to burn down the House. Sanders notwithstanding, Democrats are now the conservatives. Chris, do you have any thoughts about Daniel's comment there?
Well, after 8 years of Democratic rule by Barack Obama, where a lot of Republicans, including myself, thought he threw out the rule book and played, you know, unfair, brought Chicago politics to the national stage, I can understand why a lot of Republicans want to, as your emailer said, quote unquote, burn down the House. It is interesting because the Republicans for most of that time, not the first 2 years, but after that, have controlled one or both houses of Congress. But the executive being the one person often drives the narrative in national politics in a way that a legislative caucus cannot. So I can definitely, I mean, I hear that on the campaign trail all the time. Republicans are angry. They see the country going in the wrong direction on literally every count, and they blame it on Barack Obama and, to a lesser extent, their own, meaning Republican legislative leaders, who, quote-unquote, not doing anything about it, often not understanding that, you know, you need 60 votes in the Senate to really move something, and Republicans haven't had that in a long time. So, yeah, and I think, I mean, you know, smarter people than Alan and I have said this already, but I really think the Sanders and Trump phenomenons are two different sides of the same coin.
I'm looking at my TV here, and I see Paul Ryan, and he's going to be meeting with Donald Trump tomorrow, Alan Novak. And, you know, there's some question about the Republican convention and some question about whether Ryan would be removed by Trump as chairman of the convention. Is this a kind of a showdown between two strong-willed people?
I don't know if it's really a showdown. It certainly lends itself to that interpretation. It certainly plays well in the media that way. I think ultimately they need each other. So I think Ryan is very thoughtful. Ryan is has an agenda, a Republican congressional agenda that's very, very well thought out. And he wants the opportunity for his members to utilize that agenda in their reelection efforts this fall. I think he wants to know that Trump's not going to just, you know, dump all over it. I think, on the other hand, Trump, while Trump will say he doesn't need the Republican Party to win, in essence, he does need the Republican Party to win. He needs a unified party, as does Hillary Clinton need a unified Democrat Party. Which is the story that isn't getting discussed as much, the difficulty that's going to be there at the grassroots level, which is where I think both of these problems lie. If the people come together behind candidates, the party leaders will benefit from that rising tide. I think Paul Ryan was giving his members some cover until we get through the convention and we see where things sit. Like I said earlier, a few more polls like the Quinnipiac poll, and a lot of this grandstanding by folks that aren't supporting Trump or are supporting Trump will be irrelevant because the people will be making their voices heard.
Let me get Steve from, looks like Mount Airy, to join us on Radio Time. Steve, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, quick comment. I just think that Trump is the distillation of what the Republican Party has really been over the last at least dozen years or so.
How do you mean that? No, go ahead. Explain what you mean there, Steve.
He says what the Republican Party has, in fact, had as their policies over the last several years. Discrimination, that kind of thing. Immigration, all that.
What do you think, Chris?
I think Republicans are so frustrated by the Obama phenomenon, which I touched on before, that they have become more open to easy answers. What I have said to people is, suppose the situation with Trump were reversed and he was being asked by someone to allow them to build one of his buildings, and that person gave the same kind of shallow, benign answers that Trump is. How are you going to build the wall? Well, it's going to be a great wall. Okay,
right.
He would never stand for that in his own business. But because people are so frustrated on both sides, Bernie Sanders' easy answers and easy solutions, and the same with Donald Trump, because they're so frustrated with the standard operating procedure, which is pretty much ground to a halt, that they said, okay, well, if the complicated solutions don't work, maybe the simple ones will. And who's selling the simple solutions this year? Sanders on his side and Trump on his side. And Trump played it better than Sanders, and that's where we are.
But simple solutions in really complicated times. I mean, there's certainly an appeal to that, Make America Great Again, that looks nice on a bumper sticker. But how do you turn that into policy?
Well, I think that, you know, that comes after you win. You have to win, and then you govern. And I think Trump hasn't taken his eye. Trump is focused like a laser on dominating media cycles, connecting to people, talking to people in ways that they haven't heard politicians talk to them, and that's good and bad, because he is connecting. And I know Trump supporters that no matter what he says, they're sticking with him because they like the strength he exudes. And we often elect a leader who's opposite of the leader we've just had. We've had a president who's intellectual, aloof, has allowed federal government to grow to enormous overreaching capabilities, who seems to be more at home in a Harvard classroom than on the world stage going head-to-head with tough people in the world. Well, the one thing that I keep telling people about Make America Great Again for Trump is you take a line and put it through great and make and write the word strong over it. That's exactly what he's selling. He's selling it, and apparently 10 million people are buying it.
And Alan, are you comfortable with the fact that he has praised President Putin of Russia?
Well, you know, if people didn't dislike Donald Trump, they might call that diplomacy.
Really?
You know, I think people, I think what he's saying there is he's strong and I'm strong. And we'll figure this out because we'll do it the way two strong people do in a negotiation. I'm not saying that's, you know, the sum and substance of his diplomacy. But I've heard other leaders in a diplomatic context throw all kind of praise on the person they're going to go to the negotiating table with.
Let me get Gil from, it looks like Northeast Philadelphia, to join us on Radio Times. Gil, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to comment that a Republican establishment needs to understand one part, that Donald Trump don't need them. If they don't want to come behind him, that's fine. We voters love Donald Trump, and no matter what, we are standing with him. And he gonna win. He gonna win big in main election in November. And it's up to their establishment now if they want to come behind him now. Because voters have spoken. They have spoken big. They tried everything in a primary against him, but they lost bad.
Well, Gil, let me. I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and Chris, he's saying we don't need the establishment. He's a Trump supporter. We don't need the establishment. We've got Donald Trump.
As Alan knows better than I, from his time as head of the Pennsylvania GOP, running a presidential campaign is an all hands on deck type of situation. So, yes, the establishment needs Trump, but the Trump needs the establishment, especially to raise money. You know, Trump had this whole canard that he was self-funding the primary, which it became clear he was not. But, you know, he's not going to be able to self-fund the general. And there's a lot of things that happen in a presidential campaign that happen on behalf of the presidential candidate but don't revolve around him or her. All the things the state parties and local parties do across this Commonwealth and the other 49 or whatever. So it does take a lot of work. And when you look at the electoral map now, regardless of who the Democrat is and who the Republican is, Democrats have an easier time of it because they automatically get California and the left coast and New England, and we automatically get Texas and Florida and Ohio are up for grabs. They just have an easier dance on the Democratic side, regardless of who their nominee is, and we as Republicans have a harder task getting to that magic number of 270. So to win any campaign, both sides need each other, and that's the question. Your previous person almost talking about Hillary's issues with Bernie
right.
and Trump's issues here. So I think sometimes people want to rush this before, you know, it's not quite soup yet. You know, we have a convention to get to. The Democrats have theirs. If the parties aren't together, then perhaps that's a time to worry. But this is the time, I think, for both candidates, presumptive nominees, Trump and Clinton, to kind of prove their mettle and show that they have that extra gear to go from primary candidate to leader of the party to potentially leader of the free world. So we shall see.
We shall see. An email from Blair. This is to you, Alan. Successful businessman? Please remind your guest that Trump declared bankruptcy 4 times.
Last time I checked, there are plenty of hotels and plenty of golf courses and plenty of enterprises within the Trump business world doing fairly well. But I don't like the idea that people can use bankruptcy as a business reorganization tool. But the fact is, and I think he said, it's a tool that businesses use.
Is it... How do I ask this?
I mean, the last time I checked, all these victory rallies that he has either in Florida or New York or in Trump Tower or in his golf course luxury hotel in Florida, they seem to be thriving.
Well, they do. But, Chris, are you comfortable, though? I mean, I understand your ambivalence about Donald Trump, but just the fact that this is a person who puts his name on everything, what do you make of that?
You know, I looking at how Trump was raised and he went to military school, I really think he's still working out issues from his time at military boarding school. That's really what I get from him. And again, as I said earlier, you can't argue with it. It has been successful. It's not how I roll. It's probably not how Alan or you would roll. But, hey, we're not billionaires a couple times over like he is. So, you know, we're the little people. He's up there in the top 1%. And as I said before, past performance is the best indicator of future performance. Hillary Clinton isn't going to change. Donald Trump isn't going to change. My concern is, with Hillary Clinton having been on the national public political stage since the early 90s, and Trump being relatively new to that, there's still more new things that can drop about Trump versus new things that can drop about Hillary.
That's
obviously, if the FBI, you know, indicts her or something because of the email imbroglio, that's all bets are off. But I think there's more new information left for voters to discern about Trump than Clinton. So my concern is Trump's potential support is more volatile and Hillary's is more baked in. But as Alan, I think, would agree, we have two candidates that have really, really low ceilings.
Oh, my goodness. We're in historic territory for negative ratings for both candidates. We've never had anybody run up
negative
for president.
Over 50.
Well, you know what?
Never seen this before.
Let me just jump in here because I want to see if I can squeeze one more caller on. We got a lot of comments as well. This is Alice from Westchester. Alice, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Ever since Obama got elected and the Republican Congress announced that they were going to make him a one-term president and not work with him and block some anything, I've just kind of been amazed that that didn't mess with Americans' sense of fair play and going to work and doing your job. And I would be interested to hear if the commenters think that maybe there's any kind of relationship between that and the outsider backlash we're having. So I'll take my comment off the air,
okay.
And thank you very much.
Alice, thanks for calling
in. Remember,
Radio Time.
Alice, thank you for your call. When Harry Reid ran the Senate, he didn't run it in general order for 6 years. I've managed a couple Arlen Specter campaigns and worked on a couple before that. And the way the Senate usually worked is there were 13 appropriations bills that handled every little slice of the government. They were passed separately, then boom, off you go. Harry Reid just stopped that because he didn't want his members taking tough votes. So instead of 13 separate appropriations bills, you had one omnibus. And so it was really Harry Reid who got so far away from regular order, and Republicans got incensed about it, and Democrats kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, who cares?
So I think Alice's point, Chris makes an excellent point. I think both sides. I think what the public is fed up with and what we're seeing in the turnout for Donald Trump and the turnout for Bernie Sanders is both parties' establishment arguing, grandstanding. Barack Obama wouldn't sit down, and it's well known and documented. He doesn't like the whole idea of sitting down and working with Congress. Congress didn't want to work with him. The Senate didn't function. The Senate functioned dysfunctionally. And I think the public has basically said enough of this. This is why the establishment in both parties is being rebuked or being strongly admonished, slapped around in this primary with Trump support and Bernie Sanders support. There are different outcomes, but the dissatisfaction with people looking at the very point Alice raised, I think, is what we're seeing is this anti-outsider dynamic.
Well, we have to end our conversation on that note. Alan Novak, thanks for joining us on Radio Times.
Oh, my pleasure, Marty. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you back. And he's a president of Novak Strategic Advisors, a former chairman of the Pennsylvania Republican Party. Chris Nicholas, we won't wait another 4 years to have you back on the show. Thanks for joining us as well.
I'm going to hold you that, Marty. Thank
no. I said it on the air, so it's real.
It must be true.
It must be true. And he is president of Eagle Consulting Group, and that's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and find out much more about the program. Clearly a lot of interest in this topic, and we will be doing a lot of politics over the next couple of months. Stay with us. We'll be right back.